Turn the recording on. That's fine. I can do it before I get one. Folks, I just want to tell you where we're going today so everybody has a clear understanding of what's happening. We've promised the proponents of House Bill 3510 an hour. So you guys have said you guys can fill that hour however you want to fill that hour from where we start. We've got a little business to do first. We have a complex procedure of a bill we have to bring back, change our mind on the vote, add an amendment to it, and then send it back. It's a technical amendment. We'll do that. It should, as soon as we have a quorum, which we have now, that should take us just a couple of minutes. We have a bill that we were ready to pass the last time we met that didn't have a document we needed. We now have it. I don't think there's any discussion on that. That will take another few minutes. So I think we will probably start, and we'll keep good track, about 10 after or at latest 15 after to hear only from proponents of House Bill 3510. That should take us to leave about 45 minutes for the proponents of 3226 to talk. At the end of that, if there's some opposition and there's a little time left, we can have some opponents as well. But it'll probably have about 45 minutes of time for House Bill 3226. And we now have a quorum, so I will open the House Healthcare Committee start with another statement. There are a lot of passions about this bill, in fact, about both these bills, and I just want to remind everybody, not all of you are used to being down here. Our norms require that there not be outbursts, there not be applause, there not be shouts, that we keep this process as a dignified and respectable process. If it turns out that I'm having trouble doing that, I'll just close the hearing and we'll move on to something else. So I urge you to please treat this building and this institution respectfully. We're here to listen to you, and we want to listen to you, and let's all keep decorum. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2397 for the purpose of reconsidering the bill and possibly adding an amendment to this. This is a bill, as you remember, that's a part of the loan repayment thing that's going to Ways and Means. There's a technical fix that needs to be added about where the money might go if there's ever any money for it. It's a bill to support primary care physicians why don't you tell us what the bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as you were articulating, it creates a loan forgiveness program for the primary care practitioners in the Office of Rural Health. It appropriates the money to the offices for the purposes of the program. The committee adopted the dash ones and twos, which put some sideboards on there as far as qualifications for the students, as well as allowing the program to charge interest for any repayment or people that have defaulted on their loans. And that's where we left it when we moved it out of committee. But we do, like the chair said, we have another amendment, the dash four amendments, that has an administrative fix as far as the appropriation direction. And we're correcting that the money goes through DAS and then off to the Office of Rural Health.
Senator Cannon?
Chair Green, like I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2397.
Representative Cannon moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2397. The motion is not debatable. But the motion does require two-thirds of the committee vote. It requires six votes. Is there any objection? Hearing none. The motion to reconsider passes. And
Chair Greenlich, I move we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2397 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Cannon moves to reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2397 was sent to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? The motion carries, and the measure is once again before the committee.
Chair Greenlich, I move to adopt the dash four amendment dated March 8th, 2011.
Representative Cannon moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendment dated 3-8-11 to this bill. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Representative Cannon.
Mr. Chair, I move House
Bill. Finish
the script. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2397 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
President Cannon moves House Bill 2397 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Barrett?
Aye.
Excused.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Kennelly?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenlee?
Motion passed and the bill's on its way to Ways and Means, yes?
Say aye.
Aye. I'm sorry. Oh, did you ask me? I'm a no. No. I'm an aye. The motion had
on
enough
your
votes
own
before
bill?
It got
really?
To me, right?
Up until that point, I was going to congratulate you two on what a fine job you did with something we don't do very often, but now I don't know.
Passed. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2743. You want to fill us in on that one?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. You'll recall we had a public hearing on this bill on February 28th. It was before the committee on Wednesday. However, I didn't have all the proper documentation that is before us, which was the fiscal and the revenue on the Dash 1 amendments. This bill adds a podiatric,
easy for you to say.
I know, physician and surgeon to the definition of an attending physician for the purposes of workers' compensation. We do have a Dash 1 amendment that was supported by everybody, the Management Labor Advisory Committee, and Mr. Chair, we have not taken any action on that, and so that is before the committee as well.
Which is the amendment on that?
The Dash 1. The Dash 1, yes, do you not have it, Mr. Chair?
We don't have the Dash 1.
I have it on
Monday. What is?
Did you have it?
I do.
We have it electronically. We're in the midst of converting between electronic and paper.
My computer.
Sometimes we have things electronic, sometimes we have paper, sometimes we can't find it either way.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 1 amendments directed the Department of Business, Department of Consumer and Business Services to provide materials, I recall correctly. Develop and make available medical.
I know what the problem is. Is this
okay.
The Dash 1?
It is the Dash 1. Mr.
Dash 1 is there was a technical problem with where podiatric physicians were in the statute book, and it simply eliminated a reference to them in 677805 to 677840, so that they're covered in one place in the statute. So I think it was a pure technical one that the Legislative Council proposed.
Okay.
Yeah, is that the way you remember?
Okay. I recall.
Do we have a motion on the Dash 1 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Cannon moves the Dash 1's amendments to House Bill 2743, dated 2-14-11. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Dash 1 amendments are added to the bill. Can I have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2743 to the 243 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And this doesn't have any subsequent.
No, it does not. And there is no fiscal and there is no revenue impact on the bill.
And as I remember, this was one that MLAC approved for workers' compensation. It simply allows podiatric physicians to be primary care physicians for workers' comp, and there seems to be no objection. Is there any discussion? Could you please call the roll.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Boyle?
Aye.
Representative Weiner?
Excused.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Kinnaman?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenlee?
Aye. House Bill 2743 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a volunteer? Jim, would you like to have
one? Sure.
Representative Thompson will carry it. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2743. Occasionally, we can get things done expeditiously when we've had hearings like this before, and then we were ready to pass it, and then we lose the paperwork or something, so we can move fast. Okay. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 35, House Bill 3510, right? And you have more pages?
Yes, but this is what we'll focus on for now, sir.
Representative Denbro, thank you very much for bringing this bill to us. Do you want to introduce it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my pleasure. Honorable colleagues, Chairs Thompson and Greenlick, I'm Michael Denbro, State Representative for House District 45. That's Northeast Portland to Park Rose, from the heights of Rocky Butte to that little city within a city of Maywood Park. And it really is a pleasure for me to come before this committee that I've been missing all session. It was a pleasure to have been part of it last session. When we did some,
you too, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we did some very exciting things and some very good things for the people of Oregon along the lines of health care reform, and I'm thinking most notably of the Healthy Kids Act, which extended access to Oregon's uninsured children. We're on track to have nearly 80,000, perhaps more than 80,000 Oregon children getting coverage that they didn't otherwise have access to. It's a really remarkable achievement. The Oregon Health Authority that was created last session is working to improve the quality of care and to expand the focus on preventative and coordinated care in this state. If things stay on track, an insurance exchange for individuals and small businesses is coming to Oregon sometime soon. Despite these points of progress, though, most experts concede that many long-term problems will remain. First, there will be many people who will still be left out, and that's going to continue to drive up the cost of coverage for the rest of us. Second, for most people, insurance is still going to be tied to employment. So if you lose your job, change your job, or drop below full-time on your job, you're going to have to change your coverage, or even worse, you're going to lose your coverage entirely. Third, for the most part, our system will still rely on private insurance companies who charge very high administrative fees, create huge administrative burdens for doctors and other healthcare professionals, and whose primary interest is their own profits. At best, what we're going to continue to have is an expensive, complicated, fragmented patchwork system. There's a real danger that people are going to fall through the cracks, middle-class families are going to pay more, and small businesses are going to continue to be hammered. In addition, we're seeing that there's a very good chance that the federal reform effort may face real legal challenges. It may well be that it is unconstitutional for government to mandate that individuals purchase a particular product, in this case an insurance product. If the courts rule that way, what path do we have to get to our goal of universal coverage? Fortunately, there's a very simple solution out there, a model that has existed legally and to great effect for the last 50 years, and that's Medicare. Medicare gives us very low administrative fees, individual choice, a high level of care for our most vulnerable and expensive population, and universal access. What we need to do is take Medicare, improve it, and extend it to the entire population. That, in a nutshell, is the intention behind House Bill 3510, the Affordable Health Care for All Oregon Act, which you are hearing before you today. It moves Oregon to a comprehensive health care system with universal access, in which the cost of health care is spread across the entire population of the state and thereby made affordable. Initial modeling shows that we could take the same amount of money that's being spent in Oregon today in the form of premiums, deductibles, copays, and other out-of-pocket payments and obligations, and use it to fund a system in which the people of this state become one large self-insured pool, and everyone could be covered for that amount of money. Fortunately, the federal health insurance reform did open the door to further experimentation by the states. Thanks in large part to work done by Senator Wyden and recently confirmed by President Obama, states may have a path to try out their own solutions, as long as they are expanding access to quality health care to more people more affordably. We believe that the Affordable Health Care Act for All Oregon will do that. A wide range of physicians, care providers, healthcare advocates, and other Oregonians have come together to help craft and support this bill. You'll hear from a few of them. And I should say that the bill is the result of many months of conversations among a variety of people, and many of these conversations were quite contentious. This is not boilerplate language by any means. This is the result of a lot of work and ultimately a vision of what would work for us here in Oregon. We're very excited to be bringing House Bill 3510 to the legislature and to the people of Oregon. You know, one of the real problems of with the federal reform process last year was that advocates of single payer were never allowed a seat at the table, despite the fact that Medicare is a viable model and many countries around the world have some form of single payer that is working very effectively. For reasons of politics and influence and strategy, it was ruled out before it was even considered. That's wrong. It's bad government, and we need to try to make it right. Co-chairs Greenlich and Thompson, in scheduling this hearing, in hearing this bill, you have done the right thing, and we are very appreciative of it. I look forward to presenting to you a variety of voices. You're going to hear from doctors, from small business owners, from a variety of people about the merits of this approach. I would ask of you just one thing, and that is to take it seriously. Ask the hard questions. I believe that we as a nation are at some point going to have a single-payer system. We're going to join the rest of the world. Whether that's going to happen this year or next year or sometime in the future, it will happen. But we need to make sure that it's the best system it can be. And that's going to require you all, with all the expertise that you bring to the table, your input, your advice, your challenging. And you'll be hearing from a number of people that I think will help you with that conversation. And with that, I would be happy to entertain any questions, or you might want to wait for the experts behind me.
Would you like to join us at the dais for old time's sake?
I would very much. I have to run off to another meeting, but if that's over quickly, then I would love to.
Join us back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Denver,
thank you very much.
Great.
For the first panel, we have Paul Gorman, Sam Metz, and Doug Bigelow. And following them, we'll have Mark Kellenbach, Paco Maribona, I think, and John Anderson. I'd say if you feel like asking questions after each testimony, go ahead and do it. See if we're keeping things in time.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to testify here today and for giving consideration to the Affordable Health Care for All Oregon Act. My name is Paul Gorman. I've been an Oregon physician for 27 years. I've been a rural primary care doctor. I've been an urban HMO doctor. I've been a community hospital managed care doctor, and I've been an academic at the university. In all those places, I've found dedicated nurses, cutting-edge technology, and the best doctors in the world. But they're constrained by a system that prevents them from giving care to everyone and produces skyrocketing costs and declining health outcomes. What we're talking about here today with this bill is simple. Publicly funded, privately delivered, affordable health care for everyone in Oregon. We all chip in on the cost, and we all have a say in the coverage. Why this bill? Why won't tweaking our current system work? Let's consider the goals of a healthcare system and how we can achieve them. I believe we have five main goals for a healthcare system: access, choice, patient-centeredness, affordability, and accountability. By access, I mean universal access. Healthcare for everyone, cradle to grave, no exceptions. If you lose your job or you decide to start a small business, you don't have to worry because you and your family can get the health care you need. Other options right now for reform leave thousands of people out with no option but the emergency department. Under the Affordable Health Care for Oregon Act, it leaves no one out. Everyone is covered, cradle to grave. By choice, I mean free choice of providers. Each of us should get to choose the doctor and hospital of our choice for ourselves and our families. We should not be limited only to the doctors on some insurance company list. We should not have to switch doctors because our employer changes insurance plans. We should not find the ambulance driving us past one hospital across town to another because it's on the insurance company's list. In the current system, your employer chooses which plan you can buy. The plan chooses which doctors you can see, and you just do what you're told. Under the Health Care for All Oregon bill, we get to decide. We have a choice. By patient-centered, I mean that patients and their doctors decide the best course of treatment. In our current system, the first question your doctor asks is, what's covered, not what's best. You need medication, surgery, or diagnostic tests. One insurance plan may cover it, another one might not. And there are thousands of different plans. So instead of taking time to work with you to work out what's best for you, we doctors spend our time looking up your insurance plan's policies, filling out their forms, waiting for pre-authorization to do what's best for the insurance company. Other reforms do nothing to replace or reduce this nightmare of insurance company paperwork. Under the Oregon bill, all necessary health care services are covered. There's just one set of rules, so your doctor can spend time working with you instead of filling out paperwork. By accountable, I mean that health policy should be public policy with transparency and accountability. In our current system, decisions about coverage and costs are made by insurance company executives looking after the interests of their company, and they are good at it. Top health insurance companies posted record profits in 2009 and 2010, while Oregon and the rest of the nation struggled to make ends meet. Citizens of Oregon have no say in these policies that determine our access to care. It's all done in the back room and the boardroom. Other reform options do nothing to change this complete lack of accountability in health policy. But the Oregon bill creates a publicly accountable board to make decisions about coverage, incorporating public input, ensuring coverage of services that are evidence-based, cost-effective, and emphasize disease prevention and promotion. By affordable, I mean affordable. I mean none of us should go bankrupt because of medical costs, not patients, not governments, not businesses. There should be no co-payments that make care unaffordable for those who need it most. Other reform options do nothing to make care more affordable, although they may require us to purchase it. We're all just one serious illness away from bankruptcy. Studies conducted in over a dozen states consistently find that only a plan like the Oregon plan can cover everyone and control costs. 45,000 people die each year in America because they have no health insurance. Not because we can't figure out the diagnosis, not because we don't have an effective treatment for them, but simply because we lack the will to do so. That's about 550 Oregon citizens a year. 10 people die in this state every week simply because we bar them at the door. And thousands suffer needlessly, delaying or going without treatment because our healthcare system refuses to care for them. Today, considering this bill, you have the opportunity to improve more lives and prevent more deaths than I have had in over 30 years of practice. And in the process, you can help make healthcare more affordable so that Oregon citizens, Oregon businesses, and Oregon governments don't go bankrupt trying to stay healthy. Thank you for your attention.
Just for a time check to remind folks, we're 13 minutes into it, and we have about 30 people or so that have signed up to testify. I'll keep reminding you of time.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to all the committee members. I'm Samuel Metz. I'm an anesthesiologist, and I work at hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers throughout the Willamette Valley. Here's why I support HB 3510 and single-payer health care. It will reduce our state deficit. It will create tens of thousands of jobs. It will provide workers and their families with health care, whether they're part-time, full-time, retired, disabled, sick, or unemployed. It will reduce the cost of doing business in Oregon, and it will provide comprehensive health care for every Oregonian without spending more than we're spending now. How does this differ from our current private health insurance financing? Under this plan, all citizens are treated the same. Same benefits, same access, no fragmented risk pools. Second, primary care is emphasized. We in medicine know that encouraging patients to consume more inexpensive primary care drastically reduces the consumption of very expensive tertiary care. And finally, a single payer collects its funds equitably and progressively rather than having a multitude of private plans ration health care on the basis of ability to pay. How can this plan pay for more care for more citizens with less money? By eliminating the $4 billion a year spent in Oregon using private health insurance financing that would be saved with single payer. That is money that we pay in premiums that does not go to health care. Half of that is simply the cost of running an insurance company. But the other half is the money that providers like me and hospitals pay to collect our money from the insurance companies. This is an industry that denies...
Dr. Mouse, would you just back off a bit from the mic?
I'm sorry.
Don't mean to blow you away.
From here. Yeah,
this is an industry that denies 30% of all first claims. Not because they're bad people, but because it's good business. That $4 billion saved is more than enough additional funding to provide comprehensive, no deductible, no copay, all meds included, comprehensive health care to every Oregonian, young and old. How does the agency get its money? The money is out there. It is already being spent by businesses and families. The challenge is that when these funds get diverted to a single-payer agency, they're relabeled as taxes. Unfortunately, we have many voters who unknowingly pay thousands of dollars in premiums and out-of-pocket payments into a grotesquely inefficient system that leaves them vulnerable to bankruptcy. But they're not going to pay a penny of it if it's called a tax, even if it buys them a better product at less cost, like single-payer health care. What about jobs? Single-payer studies nationally and in 14 other states suggest that Oregon can expect about 35,000 new jobs with a single-payer program. That's 12,000 more jobs than there are in the entire Oregon insurance industry. And these jobs are expected to generate about $500 million in new tax revenue. What about businesses? No more labor disputes over health care benefits. The cost of running a human resources department gets cut in half, and entrepreneurs are free to start new businesses without worrying about where they're going to get health care. Business will flourish. What about our state government? All of the payroll and administrative savings for private business apply doubly for the state government. The cost to the state to provide health care benefits for its employees will go down. Tax revenue will go up. In summary, by establishing single-payer health care in Oregon, SB 3510 will reduce the state deficit, create jobs, improve the health of Oregon's business, provide health care for everyone, and spend no more than we spend now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Doug Bigelow. I am Professor Emeritus at Oregon Health and Science University, Department of Psychiatry. I'm speaking to you as a private citizen here. I appreciate the opportunity to address the honorable representatives today. Our health care costs per capita are double those of all advanced nations and growing fast, while public insurers have been more successful than any other purchaser at containing cost. Our public health care expenditures are as great as the entire per capita amount of health expenditure in single-payer universal health insurance systems. The key to controlling costs is the operating efficiency, purchaser power, and everybody in of single-payer universal health insurance systems. The single-payer system is actually the only business-like, fiscally conservative option, the only option for bending the public expenditures curve. In 1990, I wanted to know how a single-payer system actually worked, the nuts and bolts of one. I went to work in the Ministry of Health in British Columbia, a province very much like Oregon in size, demography, and economy. For 8 years, I held various positions there and served for a time on the Executive Director's Committee, where issues and challenges for the entire healthcare system are handled, as well as the daily management of its operations. I am able to testify to you here today that this system works. It works very well, it is comparatively inexpensive, and it is very popular. What stymies us here is the deep structural transformation which a transition to the single-payer system will involve. Migrating to a single payer combines the current multiple streams of revenue for health services into a single health insurance fund. It can be done. Dr. Shao has developed a plan for managing such a transition in his feasibility study for the state of Vermont, a detailed plan for how you do it. Similarly, payments for physicians, hospitals, lab, and other health services will involve selecting or creating a payment entity. Payment will be simpler for everybody to understand, easier to work with, and much less expensive to operate. A new price negotiating mechanism will also be required. Negotiating prices as a single payer will be simpler than the complex, expensive employer-by-employer insurance shopping, paneling, arbitrary fee scheduling, billing denial, rebilling, and other inefficient as well as futile efforts to control costs in our current multi-payer system. I can tell you from my direct participation in the revenue, negotiating, and payment structures of the BC single-payer system that they are simple, understood by all, efficient, less costly. And my observations and conclusions are consistent with sophisticated American feasibility studies as well as international comparisons. There is a way out of our fiscally unsustainable situation, and House Bill 3510 begins to create that way, maybe even in my lifetime.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of this panel? Thank you very much. The second panel I called, Mark Kellenbach, Paco Marabona, John Anderson. You'll come up. And following them, I'm going to move Dr. Frank Erickson, who's come to us all the way from Umatilla County, to join on that panel with Elena Gooney, I think, and Roberta Hall for the next panel. Go for it. Hold on a moment. There are also five people who have signed up in opposition. We'll make time for them when we're done with the proponents. And then in addition to that, Dr. Buckstein and a couple of others are talking about another bill as well, and I'll try and merge those two things so those things can happen simultaneously. See if we can figure this out today.
Okay. Do I have the mic okay?
Yep.
Great. My name is Mark Hellenbeck, and I appreciate the opportunity and privilege to address you today. I am the founding co-principal of Cascade Management, a 23-year-old affordable housing and care management company. We have over 350 employees providing services in 32 cities and to over 7,000 residents. When I began in business in 1988 as Kellenbeck Property Management, the predecessor to Cascade Management, we provided full medical coverage to all of our employees and their families. By full coverage, I mean major medical with $150 annual deductible, prescription coverage, vision, and dental. Today, 23 years later, we provide coverage to our employees only, no longer cover their families, no longer pay 100% of the premium, with our employees paying 18% of the medical premium and 100% of their dental. Today, our employees face an annual deductible of $2,000, 80% of the coverage with a stop loss of $4,000. So dramatic difference in 23 years. We know only too well that a majority of our employees are unable to provide medical insurance coverage for their families, the cost of which in most cases is a quarter of their take-home pay, and sometimes as much as their half as their take-home pay. As a result, the children of our employees often go without needed medical care. Even our employees themselves, who are covered, but due to the high deductible, often choose not to see a doctor or to get proper medical care. If this is not bad enough, our medical insurance rates have more than doubled in the last 7 years and would have increased even more had we not raised deductibles, shared increases with employees, and dropped dental coverage. We presently pay $83,000 per month for our share, the company's share, of just over 200 covered employees. Medical insurance now represents a staggering 18% of our total payroll cost, and is still growing with no end in sight. Simply put, we and our employees strongly feel we are not getting our money's worth from the current system of medical care and medical insurance, and that we have been captured in what is truly a non-competitive market. It seems to us that for $83,000 per month, we ought to be able to buy much more than we can today. Clearly, both our employees and their dependents deserve full access to needed medical coverage for 18% of our payroll cost. The situation is so troubling that it causes one to wonder how our system became so expensive and why we, as Americans, have fallen so far behind the rest of the world. The statistics speak for themselves, and American workers and their families are paying the price for the system that has gone out of control and no longer meets their needs. Being caring and thinking beings, we naturally wonder if it's not time, or really past time, to consider paying for and providing health care differently. Differently at this point in time almost certainly means making structural change in how to provide and pay for medical coverage. Most of us are very ready for a system of medical care that gets us on plane with, and perhaps someday even ahead of, the rest of the modern world. The truth is, we are presently a third world country when it comes to providing medical care for our citizens, or in this case, for my employees. The good news is there exists a proven, efficient, cost-effective, and equitable alternative for providing health care to all Oregonians. I believe it is time, perhaps long past due, and that today we must act intelligently and caringly and take the first steps to make such a system a reality in our great state of Oregon. Oregon ought to once again lead the nation and be the first state to institute a single-payer medical system. Thank you.
Thank you. Just remind you all, we're at almost 30 minutes in there. So the briefer you are in your comments, the more folks will be able to testify.
Good afternoon. My name is Paco Marabona, and I'm the owner of AAA Advanced Benefits, Insurance and Investments in Salish and on Lincoln County. For almost 30 years, I have, and my agents have primarily served Oregonians with health insurance as independent agents. due to company and client privacy concerns, you'll appreciate my need to protect specific details. However, today it's very difficult to get good, affordable coverage in Oregon for several reasons. One is underwriting. The changes in health questions, people that were covered before, like, say, somebody who had high blood pressure controlled with was a smoker, nowadays are turned down, and there's other conditions that time kind of prevents going into. The other big issue is a rapidly rising premiums. I'm sure you've heard about this, or maybe you've experienced it yourself. Many plans, both under and over 65, have gone up about 20% a year. And some have gone up for more than 3 to 5 years. So 60% in 3 years, they have doubled in 4 to 5 years. Some rate increases will range from 15 to 30% annually, while others have had increases as many as 2 to 3 times a year. A few Oregonians are getting those kinds of wage increases during the same time period.
A few years, not legislators.
Yeah, nor I. I hear about the insurance. Yeah, the insurance company making a lot of money. A few years ago, you could get a good insurance plan for $200 to $300 for an individual. Now they have to pay at least $500 to $600, as much as $1,000 to $1,200 monthly, which in many cases is similar to their mortgage payment. And that's if they're approved. If not, they go into the OMIP or one of these other pool plans, and they have to pay even more. In addition to that, there's deductibles from $1,000 to $10,000, and plus additional out-of-pocket payments of another $5,000 to $30,000 before the policies really kick in and pick up 100% up to whatever their limits are, like $2 million. Such costs, repeated, as well as other costs that are not covered, can and do cause financial hardship and bankruptcies, and are really not sustainable. People without insurance tend to shift those costs onto people who have insurance and to providers and hospitals. The legislature requires that in auto insurance everyone have coverage, because that's to protect society and businesses from losses. Health coverage should be the same. Without the cost of health insurance, businesses will be more competitive, and all Oregonians can be covered by this bill you're considering. And that's why I would support this bill, even though it could cost me my job. Okay? The single-payer plans will create more jobs, but they will eliminate some. In the private sector, jobs like for agents, claims, and support staff. And those people may well deserve, I know the bill talks about training and transitioning. The advantages of covering all Oregonians, however, I think, and as well as streamlining the enrollment and payment process, that will result in significant savings over the current system and will allow all, not just some, Oregonians to be covered. In the past, Oregon has risen to the challenge. We thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson?
You want me to go fast? No. Hi, I'm John Anderson, and I work at a truck stop. I actually work at the Truck and Travel in Eugene, Oregon. It's a family-owned and operated business. I'm the president, so I guess I'm one of the family.
What does the rest of the family say about
it? Yeah, well, anyways, I come to you, in preparation to my talk today, I went back through some old notes, and I decided to use some notes I had from 2004 when I had an opportunity to speak to a body about health insurance. In 1997, our company paid about $110 per employee for health insurance. We have 90 employees, and we are in an industry that doesn't typically provide health insurance for their employees. In 2003, it was $277. An update is just short of $400 a month per employee. We are, as many businesses, struggling to even stay alive in today's economy and environment. The escalations of health insurance premiums are unsustainable, have been, and as my brother and I sit down and look at one another, we try to figure out how are we going to go another year and provide health insurance to our employees. And I don't know, we do it, but we struggle at it. Society has spoken, in my mind, that health care is a right. It's not a privilege, as we once thought it was. And in this industry of health care, there isn't one facet that I don't believe is not broken. The public's expectations for the care are too high. They need to be reined in. The medical community, the providers, the hospitals, the pharmaceuticals, and the devices, device companies, their fees are too high. And also the legal system. Last night, no less than four times, I was offered the opportunity to call an attorney to sign up for a lawsuit for my hip, for birth control, or for the asbestos I inhaled when I was out playing in grade school. Society needs a system, and I believe the system needs to be a single-payer system. But it needs to encompass all facets. And if you don't encompass all facets, you will not solve the problem. So as you debate this bill and carve it up and go through it, address all facets, all of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Lena Guiney. Roberta Hall.
I got notes.
Yeah, but it's going to be an essay test. And Dr. Frank Erickson. The next panel, by the way, will be Jay Thiemann, Terry Mills, and Dr. Usterman.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Ilana Guiney. I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO. Our president, Tom Chamberlain, had hoped to be here today. Unfortunately, he had another commitment. You know, we are asked a lot why unions care about health care reform. And the simple answer, of course, is that it affects all workers. But more specifically, there are a couple of reasons that we like to weigh in on this topic and that we care so much about this bill. The first is I have not seen anything weigh down contract negotiations for our unions and all of our unions, private, public sector, every part of the economy, more than healthcare negotiations. It slows things down. It stops working people in Oregon from being able to, in good times, receive wages, in bad times, prevent cuts, because they're trying so hard to hang on to the health care that they have and not lose coverage for themselves and their families. People sacrifice retirement. They sacrifice income to keep their health care. And second, because as a voice for union members, we also often try to present a voice for all workers in Oregon. And there are so many workers in this state who don't have health care, who work every day for enough money to support their families, and if a health care emergency comes up, don't have enough to take care of that emergency, don't have enough to cover the costs, and don't have the health insurance that they need, because that's really what health care has become about, is insurance, to keep their kids safe and healthy. We've had great reforms in Oregon. Most children do have health care. We have the option for all children to have health care. Too many of their parents don't. Too many people still can't afford the costs of that health care coverage. And the second reason that we like to weigh in on bills like this and that we care so much about health care reform is because we have so many members who work both in the health care industries and in other emergency services who know the effects of not having health coverage, who know the effects of not being able to have routine care, not being able to manage conditions. And for all of these reasons, we are supporting HB 3510. We support ensuring that all Oregonians have health care coverage. You have a letter going into more details from our president, Tom Chamberlain, and I'll leave it at that so more people can get up here.
Thank you very much. Good example of expeditious. Hi.
Thank you for hearing us. My name is Roberta Hall. I'm a longtime Oregonian resident in Corvallis. I've worked with health issue since 1964 when I was a nursing school librarian, the old hospital school of nursing, if some of you remember. In 1969, I worked with the County Health Department on my doctoral research. I worked with Northwest Tribes on health care issues and developed courses in the anthropology of health. I'm here to support HB 3510 and advocate for a universal health care system that is not dependent on employer or employment. I represent the Rural Organizing Project, which is affiliated with 65 groups in 28 Oregon counties. Three nearby me in Linn and Benton counties. ROP works to create communities accountable to a high standard of human dignity, and its affiliates address issues that affect rural people. We support publicly financed universal health care because having access to health care is essential to personal dignity. All of us are acquainted with someone hurt by the current health care system. Molly, a member of a Corvallis affiliate of ROP, lives in a trailer park in a rural area between Corvallis and Albany. At 60 years old, she developed throat cancer and was treated for a variety of ailments for about 8 months until the cancer was finally diagnosed. Her health insurance has a high deductible and high copay and comes with her husband's employer, a trucking firm. His usual employment takes him out of town for nearly a week at a time, but when Molly became ill, he left these long-haul routes to work as an alternative driver between nearby towns so he could come home at night. This work pays much less and requires the driver to hook and unhook the trailer a couple times a working day, which can be 12 hours long. It's much harder physically, especially for a man in his mid-60s. But not working means no health coverage. Friends help Molly, who's attached to a feeding tube while her esophagus recovers from chemo and radiation, by staying with her while her husband works. Meanwhile, the bills mount up and bill collectors call daily. Only if his health holds up and his wife recovers will he return to long-haul routes and then hopefully repay their debts. I moved to Corvallis after living 4 years in British Columbia, one attraction being the universal health care in BC that attracted us there. During those 4 years, we received the kind of care common in any young family. There was one emergency overnight in a hospital when we were camping. I was accepted, no questions asked, and no delay in care. Health insurance and access to care were not, as they are here, issues that affect every single decision a family makes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick, for allowing us to present testimony on House Bill 3510. In the interest of time and due to the excellent testimony that's preceded me, I'm going to shorten my remarks from the verbal that you have in front of you. I've sent this all along to you in electronic format, so you have it to refer to. My name is Frank Erickson. I'm a board-certified radiologist in rural eastern Oregon. I'm 30 years out from medical school. I've spent the last 15 years in Pendleton as a radiologist. I'm a teleradiologist now. I'm licensed in 12 other states in addition to Oregon. I have a wide perspective of how healthcare is being delivered right now in the United States. I represent several doctors in my part of the state who could not be here but who tell me they're strongly in favor of this bill. One of them is my wife, Dr. Gordon, who sends her regards, but she was unable to attend because of a family medical emergency. Her testimony has also been submitted to you. It has been the case that over the last 2 years I've been following this since this effort's been blocked at the federal level. It caught my attention. I've accumulated enough information for 4 hours of hearings. I've been reduced to 5 minutes, so forgive me if I'm a little nervous. I really want to get the message across. I'm very proud to be an Oregonian at this moment because you have allowed this testimony that was blocked at the federal level. I believe Oregon's version of single-payer slash what we call now single-risk pool health care, presented as House Bill 3510, provides us with the tools to cure a variety of ills created by our current for-profit malfunctioning health processing industry. I chose all those words carefully to reflect my opinion on this. You've already heard that there was a Harvard study in 2005 that found 44,000 deaths per year because of under or non-insurance. That adds up to 558 Oregonians in that year. 20.8% of Oregonians in that year were uninsured. It turns out that's almost 750,000 people, and it adds up to the populations of Portland and Salem combined, just to give you a reference. I believe that as long as there are uninsured people in whatever healthcare system we have, there are going to be unnecessary avoidable deaths. So the trick is to achieve universal healthcare. You got to have them all. Got to have universal access, or it doesn't work well. And as a doctor, I hate to do harm in the process of conducting healthcare. You have to like a bill that, in the process of making Oregonians healthier and more productive, actually creates an estimated 35,000 jobs. It eliminates over half of all labor disputes. It allows all of Oregon as a group to negotiate lower prices for pharmaceuticals and services. Provides local management by district of administrative issues, something we don't have now. It gets every citizen equal access to basic medical and dental care and stops personal bankruptcies for medical misfortunes. I have current personal knowledge of one of my wife's employees who has a family bankruptcy related to medical misfortune. It turns out in Pendleton, if you have to take a life flight to Portland, which is where the specialists are, it costs $30,000 one way. There is, if you have the presence of mind to buy life transport ahead of time, and if you can afford it, it won't cost you $30,000. But it's pretty expensive. I'm of the opinion that just because you can make money doing something a certain way doesn't make it right, especially if harm is being done in the process. We call these perverse incentives. Those that place profit over people are eliminated by this plan. It offers a cleaner way to practice medicine, restoring decision-making to the doctor and the patient. No insurance company, middlemen involved. You've heard enough about that. For-profit health insurance fails to deliver basic health care because it isn't profitable. Current conditions generally favor waiting until patients become sick and then trying and often accomplishing dramatic rescues with wonderful but expensive high-tech solutions, rather than preventing the patient from getting sick in the first place. As a former biomedical engineer and a teleradiologist, I really like high-tech equipment and really like to save the day and show the surgeon exactly where to cut and tell him what it is before he goes in there. There's nothing more pleasing to a radiologist than that. But it would be great if there was something we knew about that would prevent the patient from getting into the surgical situation to begin with, and that just isn't happening right now. So I'd actually be happier on a moral basis, not reading so many CT chest abdomen pelvises. So instead of expending several hundred dollars a year to prevent a stroke and keep people happy, keep people healthy and happy, we pay $200,000 to treat their stroke and lose their productivity as a result. And that's wasteful and bad medical practice. We've had chronic problems attempting to attract new physicians to Pendleton in the last 15 years that I've been there. We would perhaps be successful at getting them to interview, but once their spouses saw that there's no Nordstrom's there, we'd lose them and say, thanks a lot, but no thanks. The plan proposed here, from my reading of this bill, says that I would expect them to say, well, look, if Pendleton needs primary care docs, needs specialists that we don't have there, we're going to pay them more to work there. That's the power of this bill. It's a tool to give access to those services by whatever means necessary to equal out the care. So some doctors' pay may go up. Some doctors' pay may go down. Those that go down a little bit can expect a little bit of a boon from getting paid for every patient they see. That's what this is all about. You know, a lot of the docs write off a percentage of patients because they know they're not going to get compensated. It's done gratis. It's just part of a medical practice. That would stop.
Mind you, there's now 15 minutes remaining.
I'm sorry. There's only a few seconds left. Other doctors hire, other countries hire doctors whose sole job it is to drive around and go door to door doing house calls. This plan would allow someone actually to be hired that way if it turned out to be cost effective. The decisions made by the proponents of this bill, or the ones who have to administer it, will be based on evidence. It would be, if you can show that there's evidence that it's actually cost effective to do something, they have the power to make it happen. This plan represents an investment in our human infrastructure, something we all benefit from supporting. It takes a positive step toward recovery from the recession and toward becoming competitive again in the global economy. It is a good plan to address a systemic problem. I side with Mark Hatfield, who's been quoted more than once today already. The national defense begins within our borders, in the health and education of our people. Can we do this? To quote a famous American, yes, we can. Everybody in, nobody out, will work for us. House Bill 3510 will let Oregon once again lead the way in health care reform. I strongly urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Any questions? Thank you. Okay, the next panel, Jay Thiemeyer, Terry Mills, and Joe Usterman.
Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify in support of a single-payer health care system, and thank you, Representative Michael Dembro, for sponsoring this very important legislation, House Bill 3510. My name is Terry Mills. I'm a longtime nurse educator. I'm a proud member of AFT Oregon, and I also serve on the Health Policy Cabinet of the Oregon Nurses Association. In your consideration of HB 3510, you should know that not only do nurses make up the largest sector of the healthcare workforce, year after year, nurses are voted as the profession most trusted by the American public, according to the Gallup poll, and their opinion is valued on providing affordable healthcare to all. Yet, despite the commitment of every nurse and every healthcare provider to provide the best possible care to every Oregonian, our current healthcare system is failing. At least 639,000 Oregonians, or about 17%, are without health insurance. And this number became very real to me when I asked my nursing students at Portland Community College to raise their hands if they were without health insurance. And over two-thirds of a class of 83 raised their hands. It is ironic to me that the very people we are educating to become health professionals don't have access to the care they themselves will someday be providing. This is wrong. Even in the nursing profession itself, many of my colleagues are not covered by health insurance because health organizations are choosing to hire on a part-time basis because they won't have to pay very expensive premiums. And nurses who work on the front lines of our health care are all too aware of how this continuing and growing crisis continues to further erode our living standards. We've certainly heard stories from the media. I would like to just share two very brief stories today with you. One was a 30-year-old patient of mine who came into the emergency department with a ruptured appendix that had perforated. He had had symptoms of appendicitis for 3 days, acute abdominal pain, but chose to wait because he did not want to risk bankrupting his family with an expensive hospital bill. And I will never forget the 45-year-old patient with stage 4 lung cancer who lived exactly 1 week. She had symptoms for over a year, a productive bloody cough, but didn't choose to seek care because, she was taking care of 3 kids at home as a single mom. Now, I pride myself teaching in the Portland Community College nursing program because we, like all accredited nursing programs in our state, practice with evidence-based research. And this means that we deliver nursing care based on science and facts, not what we see or what we hear on television. We need evidence-based policy, and that is why AFT Oregon and the Oregon Nurses Association support HB 3510, because we want our focus to be on keeping our patients well, not on what insurance plan they have and if the care they need will be covered. In closing, every fall I ask my nursing students why they want to be a nurse, and they tell me it's because they want to touch lives, they want to make a difference, and they want to help keep their fellow Oregonians well. Today, you may well be making that kind of a difference for a fellow Oregonian, or a neighbor, or perhaps even your own family. By voting yes on House Bill 3510, you have the opportunity to create jobs, provide affordable health care for every Oregon resident, alleviate suffering, but most importantly, please recognize by voting yes, you may well be saving a life. Thank you.
By the way, next panel, which will be the last panel, be Liz Baxter and Mike Huntington.
I want to express my appreciation and congratulations to this body for allowing single-payer improved Medicare for All to be on the table. I am Dr. Joe Usterman from Wilsonville, one of the original six Mattis-Hell doctors from Oregon, and a member of the 18,000-strong Physicians for a National Health Program. I'm recently retired after 50 years caring mostly for Oregonians. I have been honored by their sharing their health challenges, hopes, and fears. My advocacy for House Bill 3510 is how I am now able to continue caring for them, especially to remove their fears of getting sick and losing everything. Exactly that loss of fear that Canadians and most other industrialized and more compassionate nations' citizens enjoy. I want to show a T-shirt to this group, this panel. This shows that a World Health Organization ranking of healthcare outcomes around the world. The United States is number 37 down at the bottom. And I'll also show it to the group behind me. I don't think most Oregonians want to be 37th in anything. Oregonians are suffering and dying needlessly because they are uninsured, underinsured, and without access to medically necessary care. House Bill 3510 is the fiscally conservative, socially responsible, and morally correct and urgently needed solution. Studies, most notably one 3 years ago by the California Nurses Association, have shown a system of payment, as in House Bill 3510, would cover Oregonians at an average of 5% of annual income, $3,000 per year for a family of four earning $60,000 per year, as an example. That cannot be anywhere even closely matched by our present pay or die for-profit private health insurance disgrace. Don't believe the conflict of interest tainted opponents who say we can't afford it. I say we cannot not afford it. I'd like to give you a very quick definition of single payer, because there's always some question about that, and then I will close. Single payer, a system of payment that redirects all monies, both public and private, now being spent for health care into a single fund that covers everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Jay Thiemeyer, and I'm very honored to have the chance to speak in support of HB 3510. A recent article in the New York Times noted, quote, anyone seriously interested
in... Back up just a bit, please. Thank you.
Anyone seriously interested in improving the health of Americans and reducing the cost of health care must be willing to tackle a growing and underappreciated problem, the vast number of patients with more than one chronic illness. I qualify. For almost two decades, during the 80s and 90s, I was on the street drinking myself to death. I have a B.S. in biology from Washington and Lee University in Virginia. In fact, attended medical school at MCV in Richmond briefly during the fall of 69. I didn't leave med school to wind up on the street, but so it goes. Neither did the numbers of laid-off workers and vets suffering from PTSD that I met during the early 80s. None of us had health insurance. Thanks to a program in Portland called Project STOP, designed for dual-diagnosis low-income people to get their lives reoriented, I got supportive housing and OHP Plus coverage in 2002. For me and others, this program was a huge assist, and it was a major blow when the program was cut as a fiscal austerity measure a year later. I slid under the wire. Today, as a result of a windfall from a relative, I have been bumped off OHP Plus and SSI. When Social Security informed me of my good fortune, what mattered most, of course, was the loss of my health insurance. Like anyone who's been on the street for years, I have numerous pre-existing conditions which prevent mainstream coverage. I now pay out-of-pocket for all my medical bills, $800 at the counter before being seen by the urologist or ophthalmologist, for instance, who at conclusion of my brief visit recommends that I return in a month for follow-up. I have no choice but to pay, of course. Like every other human being on the planet, my health drives everything else in my life. And I have to wonder how much better it would be for patients if physicians were free to concentrate on care instead of worrying about the bottom line or wasting time wrangling with private insurers. Until recently, I paid monthly premiums to the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool administered by Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. OMIP, the insurance pool for those who can't get mainstream insurance, didn't cover what I needed. Cataract removal on both eyes, follow-up, additional procedures, rehab, medications, none of it was covered. When they sent notice my monthly premiums would be raised over $700, I canceled. Health is not a personal choice. Medical demands are inescapable. They aren't a privilege which should be reserved to those who can afford it, with costs determined by private insurance industry people. During the time I had OHP coverage, I went to Westside Community Health Clinic. I still go there because I trust them. Their focus is on basic medical care, not the bottom line. They spend time with me, not fending off my concerns, but trying to help me find a solution. Their approach is increasingly rare and precious and unaffordable. Oregon is in a position to do what other states aren't: universal access to medical care in a system that's coherent, not the fragmented, profit-driven pseudo-system that now exists. Under HB 3510, no one would be discarded for inability to pay. Fact is, chronic illnesses are especially numerous and trammeling for the poor. The coverage guarantee by HB 3510 would guarantee a poor person's right to life. It's as stark and humbling as that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, can we wrap up with the final two minutes each from Dr. Huntington and Ms. Baxter? I'm really sorry we haven't had more time. Please, if you have not already submitted written testimony, submit written testimony for the record. And you've been a wonderful group.
Co-Chairman Greenlick and Thompson, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony. I'm Mike Huntington, retired radiation oncologist, member of the Corvallis chapter of Physicians for National Health Program. I speak in favor of House Bill 3510. I and other health care providers and advocates are here, we're not paid, but we come because of our sorrow about a health care system that causes a great deal of needless suffering and cost. The healthcare tragedies that I witness will not be prevented by insurance exchanges, tort reform, electronic medical records, or any manipulation of the private health insurance industry. 500 Oregonians, you've heard already and know, die each year because they have been denied health insurance, either because of cost or pre-existing conditions. Private health insurance companies, like other businesses, survive by maximizing margin and excluding risk. Excluding risk means avoiding the very people who need care, those who are more likely to be sick or get sick. I cannot imagine a way to design legislation that would reduce the incentive for insurance companies to behave otherwise. This incentive to avoid risk diverts up to 40% of healthcare money into wasteful bureaucracy of paperwork, phone calls for authorization and payments. It fragments our healthcare efforts and confounds our ability to measure or control our healthcare needs and outcomes. House Bill 3510 would create a single risk pool and thereby solve the problem of excluding those who need care the most. The hard work that originated in this committee with HB 2009 and continued under the Oregon Health Fund Board and Oregon Health Policy Board will best come to fruition with the efficiencies of a single-payer financing outlined under HB 3510. Thank you.
Thank you. Baxter?
Co-Chair Greenlick, Co-Chair Thompson, and members of the committee. You have our prepared remarks, so I'm actually going to cut to the chase and just do about the last two or three paragraphs. For the record, my name is Liz Baxter. I'm the executive director of the Archimedes Movement, and we're a statewide organization that is focused on trying to get the public more engaged and involved in these important policy discussions. And we have a community leadership council that actually steers us in terms of the policy direction that we're going to be taking. And as of yet, they actually have not decided on a position around House Bill 3510. But that said, there's a lot of the testimony that you've heard already today that they are certainly in agreement with. And what I wanted to focus on is really a set of questions that they have for you, because this Community Leadership Council has also been following the work around the development of accountable care organizations. And a lot of that discussion has focused on how do you take organizations within a region, have them combine their resources, have them be more focused on doing patient-centered care, probably creating some type of mechanism to do things more creatively and outside the box than they could do within the current confines of how they're structured. And the question that came up in our Community Leadership Council is really, so how far different is that than a single-payer model that might be described? And trying to figure out, are they the same or are they not the same? And for those who know our organization, we spend a lot of time talking about how things are framed. And so, you know, one of the questions for us was really, are we stuck on a policy issue or are we stuck on the fact that this is being called single-payer? And really wanting to put that back to the committee. And, you know, if that results in the Oregon Health Authority or Oregon Health Policy and Research being asked to put an analysis together, and this is the part that I will want to read because I won't get these words all correct. So what they're asking is, can we find out if a regional or statewide model working with a capped global budget can be sustainable if it had the ability to streamline all of the funding sources related to health and healthcare and utilize those resources in strategic ways to manage the services delivered in that region for everyone in that region? That's really what we've been talking about in this accountable care organization model and development. And our Community Leadership Council is asking, is that the same as what's being proposed in House Bill 3510? Can we get an answer to that? If there are differences, what are the differences and what would it take to see if that's actually feasible, viable? Because as I wander these halls and as
wrap it up, please.
I am. As I wander the state, people all around the state are talking about single payer. I'm not sure they all mean the same thing. And what we hear is the things that we're doing today will probably be taking us down that path. But somewhere today, we can't seem to put that on the table. And so our Community Leadership Council is really asking you, how do we get to that point to understand what the differences are between what's being proposed and what's already being discussed? Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. We end up with a few more witnesses, both opposed to 3510 and in favor of 2032-26. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3226 and not close the public hearing on House Bill 3510 for the purposes of hearing any opposition to that. We have three witnesses who are both in favor of one and in opposition to the other. And I wonder if we can start with that, and then we'll fill up the time. I'll ask others used to be very, very brief. For the rest of the time, it is Friday afternoon. We are going to close at 5. Let's start with Steve Buckstein, Eric Fruits, and Arnie Patala. Is that Patala? And Steve, I'll ask you to manage the time, perhaps, and however you think it ought to work. There are also two witnesses in favor of 3226 that have come from more than 100 miles. Wes Brain and Charlotte Maloney, and if that's true, we'll have the two of you up when this panel is done.
Co-chair Greenlick, co-chair Thompson, members of the committee. I'm Steve Buckstein, senior policy analyst and founder of Cascade Policy Institute, Public Policy Research Center in Portland. I provided you written testimony on both these bills, and I'll just say very briefly, for the interest of time, on 3226, that would basically allow the state of Oregon to prohibit the forced purchase of insurance, as I understand it, under the national insurance mandate, individual mandate that's coming down the pike. I'll just mention, again, in the interest of time, as Representative Dembro stated at the beginning, that measure may be unconstitutional, but also the Supreme Court has already ruled in an Oregon case, the Gonzales case in 2006, that Oregon had the right to enforce its own rules to a great extent in health care in terms of the Death with Dignity Act. The Bush administration tried to kill that bill. The U.S. Supreme Court said, no, Oregon can do it its way because historically states have had wide discretion in those kind of areas. I think we have wide discretion in other health care areas, and so I would be in favor of 3226 and encourage you to consider protecting Oregonians against what I feel are unnecessary mandates from the federal government. On 3510, which is what's been talked about here today, primarily what's called the Affordable Care Act, I want to talk about several points as quickly as possible. You've got my written testimony. But I want to summarize the introduction of a book that was published in 2007 called Handbook on State Healthcare Reform, published by the National Center for Policy Analysis. And it basically said, and some of this was mentioned here, but in a different way, that there are three features of healthcare policy that everyone should understand. And unfortunately, I think some people don't understand from my standpoint. Number one, healthcare is far and away the most complex social system there is. Number two, healthcare policy has been the object of more studies than any other market or area of human activity. And number three, that despite the huge volume of research into healthcare, the large number of researchers involved in it, and the best motivations, we produced hardly any truly workable solutions to the problems of cost, quality, and access. That's what we're talking about, how to control the cost.
As a lifelong health service researcher, I pretty much have to agree with that.
Thank you. We are agreeing on some things.
I knew it.
He's in a pod, excuse me.
Well, the pod may.
That's anyway. Some strange pod.
But all too often, the solutions that are sought to those three problems are from the outside, are from outside of the system by trying to force the system to change through government action. And that's what this bill is doing, is trying to force the most complex system in our social system by outside action. To control costs, what we have normally done and what this bill, I think, is going to be trying to do is artificially push down producer incomes or restrain access to new technology. To improve quality, government dictates standards, in effect telling doctors how to practice medicine. To improve access, we expand government-funded health care to more and more groups and make health care free at the point of delivery. And that's a key point. People here today were talking about it should be free at the point of delivery. I'm going to argue exactly that that's part of the problem, not part of the solution. These conventional solutions have been tried in other developed countries, and they've been tried to some extent in the United States. And I think it's no exaggeration to say that they haven't worked very well. The solution to these problems, in my opinion and in the authors of the book's opinion, don't lie in top-down solutions, which is what this bill is trying to impose, but instead they lie in bottom-up liberation. We need to free people from the institutions that prevent them from solving these problems themselves to a large extent. The most common source of these problems is the fact that people generally don't bear the full cost of their bad decisions or realize the full benefits of their good decisions. On the buyer side, or the patient side in this case, this means patients who overuse healthcare resources usually pay only a small fraction of the cost, and in effect are wasting resources that others might use. On the provider side, incentives are also distorted. In fact, healthcare providers rarely reap the benefits of being better at what they do. The best doctors don't necessarily get the most compensation. But these problems aren't unsolvable. Not only does healthcare not have to be expensive, there's no reason in principle why we should have to wait for it. There are large systems, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with, like the Mayo Clinic, Intermountain Health in Utah, that are providing quality care at a much lower cost than most of us in this room are familiar with. In pharmacies, shopping malls, and big box stores around the country, people are getting high-quality primary care at walk-in clinics for half the normal cost or less, and with very little waiting time. So how do we get from here to there? How do we reduce costs and improve access? Complex systems cannot be successfully reformed from above. They're simply too complex. To have any hope of making such systems fundamentally workable, again, I think reform has to start from the bottom. Ultimately, every problem in our healthcare system begins with perverse incentives. One of the previous panelists was talking about the incentives in the system. There are perverse incentives for individuals, patients, doctors, nurses, hospital managers. Everybody in the system right now, to one extent or another, has perverse incentives. The book's introduction that I was quoting from here concludes by reminding us that problems are ultimately solved by people. The best government can do is remove the legal obstacles that stand in the way. And I want to give you just one example of people here today talked about people before profits. The assumption of the people supporting this bill, I think, is that profits are bad, profits drive up the cost of health care, but not necessarily. There's a good example of where exactly the opposite is true, and I think if we allow it, we can use the profit motive to reduce the cost in health care. I attended one of the Oregon Health Fund Board community meetings back in 2008 when we were talking about similar issues, and I brought up, you heard this, the slogan, profits before people. And I brought up the example that was about a year old at that time of Walmart introducing $4 generic prescription drugs. And I said, why do you think Fred Meyer matched those $4 prices, and in some cases beat them? Why did Safeway match those $4 prices? And they started thinking about it. The reason Walmart did it was because they wanted to make profit. They're a profit-driven organization. And they were able to dramatically reduce the cost of generic prescription drugs. And virtually everybody in the marketplace followed them right away because they didn't want to lose customers. I think if we were sitting here today and Walmart hadn't done that and we were talking just about HB 3510 and what it could do for costs, I don't think anybody in this room would realistically think that we could reduce the cost of prescription drugs down to $4 through any kind of group purchasing or government price controls. But Walmart did it because it's a quote-unquote greedy big corporation. It wanted to make money. And prices dropped very, very quickly. So that's one of the ways that we can use profit in a positive sense. I think there are a lot of others. I won't go into them. But if we allow the private sector to make profit in healthcare, some of which is prohibited now, I think we'd see lower prices and easier access. Finally, I want to mention a researcher in 1999 who came to America from Britain. His name is Dr. John Spears, and he spent a month studying the Oregon Health Plan in 1999. He wanted to compare it to the British National Healthcare Service that was talked about here previously. And coincidentally, when he was here in 1999, the father of the Oregon Health Plan, who was then governor for the first time, John Kitzhaber, was advocating or at least allowing, I guess, an $80 million cut in the budget of the Oregon Health Plan. It was a few years old, and already, as some legislators thought, it was possibly breaking the bank of the budget. And so there was a proposed reduction in the budget. And as Dr. Spears noted in the report that he wrote after coming to Oregon, quote, "political fixes in health care come unfixed very fast," unquote. He noted that the British national health care system, a single-payer plan, the sort of thing that you're looking at, was founded back in 1948, and they made some fundamental mistakes right from the beginning. They tried to suppress price. They tried to make everything, quote-unquote, free, and it's a good system until you're sick, until you need it, and then either you can't get access in many cases or you stand in line and wait too long. He mentioned specifically, for example, in the area of drugs, that only 15% of those who could benefit from interferon beta for MS receive it. There's uneven delivery of combination AIDS therapy. An interesting one that I was not aware of, doctors in Britain, at least in 1999, were told not to prescribe Aricept for Alzheimer's until the patient asked for it. Think about that. Patients who can't even remember their name cannot get the drug they need unless they can remember the name of that drug. That's how bad it got in Great Britain. Cancer care is particularly shocking, he said. They, at that time anyway, there were only 340 clinical oncologists in all of Great Britain, compared to about 20,000 in the United States. We're about five times bigger than Britain, but still, the ratio is pretty stark. So he found that the British healthcare system and the Oregon Health Plan deliberately disempowered the individual. They were intended to do so, he said. They were told, Oregonians here on the Oregon Health Plan, Britons there, they were told that only the experts, the doctors and the social scientists, could know how to satisfy their health care needs. So the patient is not seen as a consumer in these kind of systems. The patient is basically told what to do. The choices are limited, no matter what people who like this bill think. The choices end up being limited. And finally, Dr. Spears ended with two quotes that I want to leave you with. He quoted an American author, Nelson DeMille, who said, "It is dangerous to be right when the state is wrong." And that's sort of how I feel sometimes. I feel the state is wrong in things. I think it would be wrong in doing this, but I'm willing to stand up and say so, just like Dr. Spears.
It's also dangerous to be wrong when the state is right.
Not as dangerous. Not as dangerous. And the British healthcare manager, he quoted Lee Richardson, and I can't get this quote out of my mind. She said that the fundamental issue in this bill and everything else in the healthcare field, who decides? Who decides?
Make sure your phones are off. It interferes with our recording.
I thought I turned it off.
Do the nine people on the board that this bill would set up decide for the rest of us, or do we get to decide? And that doesn't mean that we all have to pay with our own money. I'm fully willing to talk about things like vouchers and ways of providing payment for people who can't pay for their own health care. I think we all want quality, affordable health care, but I'm afraid that this bill would be a serious step in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here, Co-Chair Greenlick, Co-Chair Thompson, rest of the committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Arnie Patella. I'm a retired insurance consultant broker, currently very pleased to be a full-time alpaca farmer. I spent 32 years as a consultant and actually worked with the Oregon State Legislature back in 1995, writing some bill language for the Oregon Health Plan. I chaired the Oregon Health Underwriters Committee, and I also was legislative chair of the National Association of Health Underwriters. I also have been tried to be as active as I can with regard to health care reform, and so I was actually part of the Archimedes movement for a period of time, and it was a pleasure to see Liz Baxter here. I haven't seen her for a couple of years. So the thing that, just briefly, what I would like to say, because really what I want to do is get to something that I want to call the deal. I'd like to propose that both sides of the aisle get together and do a deal. And the reason is because if we just implement single payer, on the short term it looks great, but in the long term we're going to end up with queues like they occur in Great Britain and Canada. we're going to run into those types of systems. We're going to run into rationing. As a matter of fact, just last Thursday, March 3rd, British National Healthcare System is considering not providing pain-relieving surgeries to fat people. Okay? In other words, people over mass index is above 35, so they won't give knee surgeries and hip surgeries to them. That's what happens within a single payer because the funds run out. What I would suggest you do, in terms of my concerns about single payer systems, all of the concerns that I really have are well documented in a book called Lives at Risk, published by the National Center for Policy Analysis. There's a link to it. You can download all the chapters, and I believe it's a must read for anybody considering implementing a single payer healthcare system. One of the things that I also had done, it was a really real privilege, is I got to participate in something called the Oregon Health Assessment Project that started back in 1999. Completed its work in 2003, and that group consisted of the governor's office, hospital administrators, business leaders, physicians, professors from OHSU, health insurance executives, and consultants. We all put together a plan based on values and put something together that we all agreed to, but when it came time to sign it, there were only three of us that would sign it. And the reason is all of the players that are part of the healthcare system didn't really want to lock their members or their cohorts into something that they might personally agree with, but we're not willing to commit everybody else to. But we did get a pilot project almost underway. We actually got together with the community of McMinnville, and we met with the hospital administrators, we met with the doctors, we met with several of the citizens, business leaders, and they had agreed to implement a plan, and part of that plan was a public plan. In other words, much like what you're proposing here. Since that time, it didn't go through. There were some state regulatory issues that came up. And so what we did is we still, some of us still continue to communicate. And recently we've come up with something we call the deal. And the reason for the deal is, we think it's ludicrous of people of one party to think they can force a system on everybody and everyone in a free country such as ours. For example, today in our nation's capital, the Republicans, with some help from moderate Democrats, are in the process of attempting to defund the implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. It's no wonder, because the bill is deeply flawed. It was passed late on Christmas Eve, 2009, by a purely partisan vote, all Democrats, only after some states were given a deal that actually shifts the wealth of other states, including Oregon, to those states. So it's a horribly flawed deal. So why don't you consider getting together, and what we do is put together a deal. And so the rest of this is just basically going to describe the deal. It proposes to create a new system designed to replace the old system. It's to be actualized by the free will of individuals. In other words, they don't have to choose the new system, but if they want to, they can choose it. It migrates from what we currently have is defined benefits to defined contribution.
Please, if you've distributed that to us in writing, it would be very helpful.
Okay, I have distributed it. I'll summarize it real quick. It introduces, again, this new public plan. And the characteristics of the public plan are that it has the public plan can use trying to get to the right place here. It can use its revenues derived from assessments that go into by these defined contributions into something we call a medical savings account, and that medical savings account can in fact buy health plans as well as pay for health care. And we assess money that goes into that. And these assessments then can be used to support fixed professional salaries, operate the expense of primary cost centers in lieu of less efficient fee-for-service insurance models, the public plan shall pay par reimbursement to the extent that it uses private sector services. In other words, we get rid of the cost shifting. I think what I'll do is quit at that time, and I appreciate the opportunity to do it. But what I really suggest you do is look at putting together a deal. Don't do all single payer, but allow people to have the free choice. If they want to be part of a single payer, they can. If they don't, they don't have to. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Greenlick, and thank you, Chairman Thompson. I really appreciate being here. My name is Eric Fruits. I'm an economist, Oregon economist. I've worked on a variety of health care and health insurance issues, both at the national and state level. I'm an adjunct professor at Portland State University, where I teach courses in the business school and the School of Urban Studies.
I think it's clear without letting the lights down too much.
Yeah, I'm getting sleepy.
Who's the whole audience?
Here we go. I think I'll wake them up. I've also conducted a study of the Oregon Health Plan for the Cascade Policy Institute, and I think many of those lessons from the Oregon Health Plan can actually be applied to HB 3510. First thing is, the health insurance system and the healthcare system is very complex, and we all know that. But one of the things we need to remember, and I know some people may disagree, but it's the market is made up entirely of people like you and I. We are rational people, we're intelligent people, and we want the best for ourselves, we want the best for our families, we want the best for our communities. And because we live in a world of rational, utility-maximizing individuals, we have to accept the fact that legislation always works as it's designed, but rarely works as it's intended. And that's one of the problems you have with healthcare, and that's that health markets are a lot like a balloon. The Journal of the American Medical Association was actually cribbing from the New England Journal of Medicine when they said the medical cost control has been compared to squeezing a balloon. And it's true, and it's true with a lot of regulation. As you squeeze that balloon, it bulges at one end, and as you squeeze the bulge, it bulges somewhere else. You try to squeeze all the bulges, and the balloon's going to pop. And I think that what's going to happen here is with HB 3510, this is going to be yet another attempt to squeeze all the bulges, and we're going to blow up the system. One of the problems that you have with 3510 is that it really promises an all-you-can-eat healthcare buffet, in which even non-residents and their families are allowed to belly up to the buffet. The bill extends coverage to individuals not just that live in Oregon, but also individuals that work in Oregon but live somewhere else, and their families. Based on census data, I estimate that that would add about 125,000 out-of-staters to Oregon's taxpayer-funded insurance program. Let me say that again. 125,000 people who do not live in the state of Oregon will be eligible to get free health care, to eat at our buffet paid for by everyone else. The bill outright forbids any form of cost sharing.
This is out-of-staters who work in Oregon?
Out-of-staters who work in Oregon get it, and their families.
They're paying taxes right there.
But their families aren't, and their children aren't. So we can get to that later.
I hope not. We're getting out of time.
We're done in time.
Oh, believe me, I'll be faster than everyone else here. The bill outright forbids any form of cost sharing and co-payments and deductibles, and prescription drugs are provided at no charge to patients. On top of that, almost any product or service, such as anything can be squeezed into one of 20 broad categories, qualifies for coverage under the legislation. But unlike Oregon's health plan and its bold experiment, there's no rationing at all through a prioritized list or any other form of rationing. If the patient and his or her provider agree on a course of care, Oregon taxpayers must pay for it. What we find, though, is that when you have an all-you-can-eat buffet and it provides food that you can eat with no additional charge, people tend to overeat. I learned that lesson myself when I got married. My wife had a Cadillac health insurance plan because she was a teacher. I ended up getting prescription ibuprofen because it was free. I didn't have to pay a penny for prescription ibuprofen, even though I could buy it cheaply at the store over the counter. This is a real recipe for overconsumption of healthcare and healthcare services. What you find, though, is that when you have no real controls on the consumption side of healthcare, HB 3510 has only one way to control skyrocketing costs, and that's by restricting payments to providers. And with that, consumers are going to show up to the all-you-can-eat buffet and find out that the chef has quit and the kitchen is out of food. One of the problems you have with the provider payments is that you have to walk a tightrope. What we have in the legislation, it says that, first of all, any form of private insurance that
that duplicates the public system is forbidden outright. You add that to the requirement that says a healthcare provider must accept payment for the plan as payment in full, and you have a single payer system that makes the state the monopoly provider of health insurance. Because there's no way to bend the cost curve on the consumer side, the only way the state can control costs is by squeezing providers. And I have no faith that an unelected, the nine great minds that are going to make up this board, powerful board, and unelected again, that they're going to be able to walk this tightrope of paying providers enough to stay in the state without handing out a windfall to those select few who have extraordinary access to the political system. It also has to be remembered that we live in the United States. We live in Oregon. We don't live in the former East Germany that had a fence around the country. We don't live in Cuba that's surrounded by miles of ocean.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up pretty quickly.
I can wrap up, sure.
Be great.
So the challenge then is that if you don't pay these providers enough, they're going to leave the state. We saw this with Oregon, with the Oregon Health Plan. As of now, approximately one quarter of primary care providers do not take Medicaid patients. And that's one of the problems that we have with this system. The proponents are pitching it as a Medicare for all system, but we run a real risk, a serious risk, and a very likely risk that this will be a Medicaid for all system with low reimbursements as the only way of bending the cost curve, which means that you'll have doctors who will refuse patients or leave the state. The proponents say that it's easy for patients to, that patients can choose their doctor, but can doctors choose their patients? And I'm afraid if they can, you're going to find a strong reduction in service. We saw this happen in Massachusetts. You can read the quote there. I won't go over that again.
Have you wrapped up?
I am wrapped up. Single-payer system, well, one last thing. Single-payer may work in countries, but it cannot work at a state level. It cannot work simply because we cannot put shackles on people. We cannot keep doctors in the state. We can't keep businesses in the state. We can't keep people in the state. And we can't stop people from coming in to consume the services that are provided freely by everyone else. And so that's why the system wouldn't work here at a state level or any state level for that matter. So thank you very much. I apologize for taking too much time.
Well, I apologize for having so limited time for you, and I really do, but I do hope to get a couple other folks in. Wes Brain, Charlotte Maloney, and Kate Jodis, is it? Or is that a V?
I've already spoken.
Oh, it's no, Kate Jodis.
Is it
Kate Jodis? It's not Kate Jodis?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And who's already spoken? Wes Brain?
Brain, and you call Charlotte. Those three.
And Charlotte Maloney. Okay, go for it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Wes Brain. I traveled from Southern Oregon, and very good to be here with
Thanks
you.
Thanks for coming.
I came today to speak in favor of HB 3510, and I want to leave an image with you that you'll remember. It's not this mug right here. It's my daughter, Tanya Ray. Tanya was born in Rogue Valley Memorial Hospital on March 19th, 1973. She died in the very same hospital January 31st, just 2 years ago. Tanya was diagnosed with leukemia in the year 2000. She was gainfully employed working in the mayor of Medford's office as a grant writer. Had a great career happening with her when she was diagnosed with leukemia. Insurance companies did not kill Tanya Ray, but they made her life miserable for 9 years. Every step of the way, she had to fight for the treatment that her doctors wanted her to have. When all of her teeth fell out from radiation and chemotherapy, well, that was dental. That had nothing to do with medical care. When her oncologist wanted the bone marrow transplant to take place at Oregon Health Sciences University, insurance companies knew better. They wanted her to go to Seattle. Senator Lynn Hannon stepped in and helped us with that and fixed that. But every step of the way, she had to fight the insurance company. She said, Dad, I should be walking in Lithia Park. I should be working on my health instead of fighting the insurance companies. We can do better than this. We can do a lot better than this. We are spending so much money spinning wheels. These insurance companies make money by denying care, and that's what they did with Tanya. I'm here. Please remember my daughter, Tanya. She is here with us today, and I'm going to work on this the rest of my life. We can do better in this country, folks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, please.
Thank you for allowing us to have testimony, provide testimony. I actually hadn't prepared a presentation because I thought that I didn't realize you'd go by the distance thing, and I may have even made a miscalculation of my mileage, but I'll make my comments very brief. My name is Charlotte.
Just so you're not from Salem.
I promise you. I don't live in Salem.
I'm a county person.
It's a round trip thing. No, but anyway, my name is Charlotte Maloney. I've been an occupational therapist for 38 years. When I was a new therapist, Medicare was new, and I was told that our medical system was going to deteriorate because of Medicare. It was socialized medicine, and I was scared. I thought, what does this mean? You know, I think all of us are afraid of change. It's difficult. Some of the statements that I've heard earlier today that are critical of the concepts in Senate Bill, HB 3510, I think the issue about rationing, we're suffering rationing now when people don't take their children to a doctor because they can't afford to go, and then they take them when something's very progressed. I agree with Mr. Brain here. I think we can do better than that. And I think the concepts in the bill are studied by many groups. It's not perfect, I'm sure. I'm not an economist. But from my perspective of seeing people over my career and being a small business owner in the past, I really hope that you consider it and get your questions answered if you have strong questions.
Thanks. You very much. I do want to ask, are there other people here who have intended to sign up in favor of House Bill 3226? Apparently there's being... No, I assume you are. Is there anybody else? But we're apparently picking him off the wrong sheet. Great. Please go ahead then.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Kate Joudis. I'm a member of Americans for Prosperity, and I live here in Salem. I'm going to tell you a short story to set up my remarks and make a point. Many years ago, I challenged the seatbelt law in a traffic court in Seattle. In my testimony, I said something, among other things, that I didn't choose to wear a seatbelt any more than I chose to wear a garter belt. The judge ruled in my favor, saying I was questioning my fundamental constitutional right to choose and had no choice but to find me not guilty. I've come here today asking you to reject House Bill 3510 in favor of House Bill 3226 because, once again, I'm standing on my fundamental constitutional right to choose. I'm the daughter of a chiropractor. I was born at home. My father delivered me. I have never received treatment from a medical doctor. I have never taken prescription or illegal drugs. I've never been inoculated. I've never had my blood typed. I am 54 years old, and I'm the picture of health. And God forbid that I get hit by a bus when I leave the room. I'm asking you to allow me to continue to live my life the way I choose to. I don't want the government to force me to go to a medical doctor or to punish me because I don't. House Bill 3226 affords me that freedom. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have all the folks from interested in testifying on 3226. Okay, well, we do have a couple more who wanted to speak. We can do it really briefly, speak against 3510. Diane Schendel, Fred Yates, Doug Youngman. Why don't, if you'll each take 2 minutes. Trying to be even-handed, it's not always the easy thing to do. Please go ahead.
I'm Doug Youngman. Thank you, chairs, for being here, and committee members. Government spending has been out of control for the last 20 to 30 years, And today, it is no subtle secret that our economy is on the brink of collapse, with an unsustainable and accelerating national debt of more than $14 trillion. Just imagine if government decided to pass out computers and cell phones to all students receiving public education. It would add to this debt and enrich computer and cell phone manufacturers while stifling competition in those markets. We'll get the same result from the government-mandated health care. Just like when government gets involved in education, the quality goes down and everyone is unhappy. And then the corporations take over. In healthcare, we have insurance companies taking over and drug companies taking over. Ezra Klein from the Washington Post said, America is really an insurance company with an army, and that army is Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. We need to admit these are all welfare programs. We need to do something dramatic. We need to stop or at least cut back on all this spending that is bankrupting our country. There is no right to government-paid health care, just as we have no right to someone else's money. Supporters of this bill want a right to everyone else's money. That is un-American. We have no right to other people's life, liberty, or fruits of their labor. Frederick Bastiat said, everyone wants to live at the expense of the state. They forget that the state wants to live at the expense of everyone. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be motivated to change the healthcare system. We all need to help facilitate a system that is provided through the market economy that encourages quality healthcare through competition. We have to admit that the market can do a much better job than any government involvement. Our current situation proves my point. Healthcare in this country is going downhill, and everything is getting more expensive. It is getting worse rapidly. So I come before this committee today in a time of unprecedented national debt to remind you that we can no longer afford mandates on our personal and economic lifestyles. We want government to protect our liberty, protect the market, and quit squandering our wealth. Congressman Dr. Ron Paul said, forcing Americans to obtain a congressionally approved health insurance plan is not just unconstitutional, it is a violation of the basic freedom to make our decisions regarding how best to meet the health care needs of ourselves and our families. The truth is, the underlying scheme of this bill is not about health care, it's about power. The bill is designed to do two things statists love more than anything else: vastly increase the size and power of government and give our federal masters more control over our personal business. I leave you with one final quote from Voltaire, who said, anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Thompson and Greenlich, my name is Diane Schindel, and I thank you for this opportunity to appear before you today to discuss House Bill 3510, which, if passed, would create a single-payer system of health care in Oregon. I'm testifying in opposition to this bill. A single-payer system rests on the premise that there is a uniform best health benefit plan for every individual, and government officials and politicians know what is best. That, in and of itself, should be enough to put an end to this. I do not want my choices regarding what medical services are available to me or under what circumstances they are available made by anyone but myself and my doctor. With the passage of this legislation, these choices will be made by government officials and political elites. The current political climate being what it is, I have no confidence that these choices would be in my best interest. Both of my daughters work for physicians who are adamantly opposed to single-payer and government-run health care. In fact, one of these doctors left Canada to start his own practice here. This legislation would create a huge new bureaucracy and would require sizable tax increases. I contend that government never does anything more efficiently or cheaper than the private sector. I cannot think of one government-run program that hasn't turned into a huge, inefficient bureaucracy. And let's not forget the fraud and abuse that permeates them. We, the taxpayers, are always asked for more to cover inefficiencies and outright mismanagement. I can attest to this because I have worked for a government agency for the last 12 years. Single-payer offers no guarantees on cost or quality. Once we establish a single-payer plan, we won't be able to easily undo it because we will dismantle health insurance companies and plans. We will not be able to easily or quickly rebuild them if Oregonians are not happy with the new system. Massachusetts has not seen any substantial reduction in medical bankruptcies, and medical costs have actually risen. Oregon should watch and learn. And we're all aware of the reports of long waiting times to see specialists and schedule procedures in Canada. And I'm sure you've all read the reports that the UK is moving away from single payer towards private partnerships. We need reforms in healthcare, but single payer is not the solution. We need tort reform, health savings accounts, catastrophic coverage, portability, and the ability to buy insurance across state lines. These are things that make sense, things that lawmakers seem to be uninterested in without exception. HB 3510 is a colossal governmental power grab, and I urge you to vote against it. With single payer, everyone has health insurance, not necessarily access to health care. Access to waiting lists is not access to health care. I urge you to vote against it. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, chairs, members of the committee. My name is Fred Yates. I represent Americans for Prosperity in Linn County. I'm in total and complete opposition to HB 3510 and ask that you stop this bill now. This bill is not in the best economic interest of our state, and contrary to the desires of most, health care is not a right. To the authors and supporters of this bill, I ask, exactly what part of our nation, our state, is beyond flat broke, don't you understand? Where is the cost estimate to fund this monstrosity? Who do you think is going to pay for this? It's not the magic tooth fairy. It's not the beneficial government. It's we, the taxpayers. The 35,000 jobs that they keep touting are government jobs, which is an even greater burden upon the taxpayer. Are you aware that DHS consumes almost 27% of the total Oregon budget? DHS currently spends almost $17 billion out of the $60 billion state budget. All other agencies combined only spend $9 billion. DHS will have to grow astronomically to be able to implement this plan. This is not a plan. It's a looming disaster. Our nation cannot afford Obamacare. Our state cannot afford Kitzhaber care. Please do not allow this bill to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you for being such a responsive audience. I really appreciate that. I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 3510 and House Bill 3226. Hold on just a minute, please. Hold on.
Get security.
No, you don't need security. He's just right. Calm down a minute. We're still in session. Madam Administrator?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make note that we have written testimony submitted by Senator Jackie Dingfelder in support of House Bill 3510 for the record. And I also want to note for the record that I have received 280 emails in opposition to House Bill 3510 from the Americans for Prosperity. They will be put on a DVD. I had to have IS pull it off and file them that way. I believe some of the members have received those also.
Yes.
They will be archived and put on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nope. We're closed. Thank you all.